Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club for people who hate reading. This week's our theater pick, so we picked the movie James Bond Spectre. We bring you movie news, and this week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston.
A cryptic message from Bond's past sends him on a trail to uncover a sinister organization while M battles political forces to keep the Secret Service alive. Bond peels back the layers of deceit to reveal the terrible truth behind Spectre.
I would say this version of Bond is less of a playboy and more killer. You know, like less James Bond, more Jean Reno in The Professional.
Well, considering that he just kind of left the chick laying on the bed and walked out the window.
Well, that, I mean, look, that's
he's not even like, I'm going to bang you first, okay?
That's kind of true to form from what we know about Bond. And but I mean, as far as the brooding as opposed to sort of your playboy kind of Bond, I mean, that was something that they had set up, you know, quite early with Casino Royale.
Yeah,
I think we can all sort of agree that it went off the rails even for a Bond movie, and I think people know what I mean because all the old Bond movies were almost equally as ridiculous. But the Pierce Brosnan ones, even though he was a good James Bond, and I love Judi Dench as that version of M.
She was great.
She was terrific. She played such a great
Bond. Best casting of all the entire
series. Pierce Brosnan was practically Inspector Gadget. I mean, he was one step behind trying to find the Pink Panther.
Yeah, it absolutely was Inspector Gadget-ish. I mean, they really laid heavy on the bells and whistles that went along with Bond.
Yeah, but
they set up the brooding thing with Casino Royale.
But Sean Connery started that with all the gadgets.
Yes and no. I actually
remember
think
he had the little. It was a big thing, that little rocket pack he had. That was
he
huge.
Did, but at least it served a purpose. Pierce Brosnan used gadgets just to kill a few seconds of screen time.
Yeah, it seriously was like why would you have that for that ultra specific situation?
Yeah, with the pen.
Yeah, the pen, the laser watch and whatnot. I mean, there was more practical gear you could have sent the guy out to feed
that laser watch.
Or the X-ray glasses, which, by the way, if I remember correctly, the movie If Looks Could Kill, the spoof of James Bond, did it before that movie.
Yeah, they did.
See, that's what it seemed like was sort of despite good casting choices of the changing of the guard, it went off into the deep end. But they really brought it back with Casino Royale and then, Quantum of Solace and then...
Skyfall.
And then Skyfall. Now, Quantum of Solace, I know people kind of give a lot of shit to, although there's a great podcast hosted by Matt Myra called James Bonding. And essentially, it's a James Bond dedicated podcast. And
people
he was
say
the one
bondage.
That originally gave me the idea or said, if you watch Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace back to back, they take place, you know, seconds apart, essentially. So it makes much more sense and it's not convoluted as it was when you watched it a year and a half, 2 years later. But Skyfall, the reason that I was so happy at the end of Skyfall is because this was the movie that it was setting up. You know, the leather door with M's office, Moneypenny's relationship with Bond. We saw it all. We saw the genesis of everything.
All
there was to do was get back to a good old-fashioned Bond movie, you know?
My biggest problem with Skyfall is that I think it went 180 degrees away from Casino Royale. It went from less, you know, less Christopher Nolan to, you know, closer to like the Batman movie with Mr. Freeze in a way.
I look at it less as sort of the next installment of a Bond movie but more of like the third in the trilogy, you know?
No, I see what your point, because it really was setting up this movie, which I liked because it came back to more of the realism of James Bond. This was the dark, brooding hero who some mysterious force had just kept attacking him. You know, he lost everybody. He lost the one person he probably trusted, being M, which was one of the plot devices I really liked, because he was still loyal to the Judy Dench's character. He didn't really trust the new one, which I thought was a really good plot device with that set.
You know, this one for me, this was the somberest I've ever seen a Bond film. It seemed very somber, and it was actually, for the most part, fairly slow.
No, this is a 2.5-hour movie that was very slow.
But like Ryan said, I enjoyed the fact that they took the other films and did little Easter egg things leading up to this, and this is the culmination of all those little idiosyncrasies that you didn't notice when you're watching it.
I am surprised
they got laid out, and I think casting Christoph Waltz for the main character, or for the main bad guy, was really well done. But I think he didn't get enough screen time.
Oh no, I actually agree. It's Christoph Waltz, and he's literally the best bad guy like you can pay. Ever since Tarantino, he's like the perfect bad guy.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. I got to call you out on something. All the damn names you mispronounce on a movie show, and you say Christoph Waltz.
Why? You mean the fact
you, that like, you almost corrected James. It's Christoph Waltz.
I don't care. That's the way I say it. I'm American. I am American.
I was wondering if you were going to get that.
Why don't you say the girl's name? Can you say her name?
No. I love Christoph Waltz, but I actually agree. I actually thought they oversold him for the amount of screen time he had. Because they sold him at the middle of this movie being the ultimate bad guy. You know, his tentacles were everywhere, and that's the part that one of the things that really bugged me.
Well, what's funny is they had such an iconic, great character actor in Christoph Waltz, and they played more on just the character being the pot of gold at the end of that rainbow, not necessarily him playing the character. You know, it was all about sort of the reveal of, oh shit, that's Blofeld, you know.
Dr. Evil.
To me this was all about marrying the two worlds, sort of the new James Bond that they had made with Casino Royale, and then the old Bonds. And the way that they've done this sort of like Morpheus loop or Mobius loop was really interesting. You know, like where you got these last ones sort of put into the beginning and you can go through. There's a theory that James Bond is a Time Lord, and that's why he keeps changing faces throughout the years.
You've spent too much time with Doctor Who.
I know.
It's time to come away. Get out of the blue box. Step away.
I'm sorry, it's bigger on the inside.
Well played, sir. Well played. Jeez. But, you know, I got to say, though, the most spectacular scene for me in the entire film was the helicopter scene.
No, for sure.
The pilot they hired.
Which helicopter scene? The one at the very beginning?
The beginning one.
Yeah.
The pilot they hired to pull those maneuvers is amazing. Whoever did that stunt piloting with that helicopter, you have mad skills.
Like, yeah, for sure.
That blew me away, the skill that pilot had. Because think about that. The turns, the barrel rolls, the upside down, the downward, the stalls, everything he did with that helicopter was pushing the limits. Like whoever they picked for that was amazing. Those are very
important. I was curious while I was watching it. Like, I wonder how much of this they actually pulled off, and then how much of it they superimposed later or something like that.
I don't know. A lot of it looked, if it was CG, they did a masterful job.
Well, I'll tell you what, there was a lot of it that was like James said, just legit stunt flying. And that's hard enough in a damn fixed wing, let alone a chopper.
Yeah,
doing crazy stalls like that. I mean, if that was real, dude, hats off. I mean, that's some epic like worthy cojones stuff.
I do want to say the one thing I thought was funny. I mean, you had amazing bad guys like Odd Job with a steel brim. And who was the bad guy of choice? You got Dave Bautista with metal fingernails.
Yeah, what was that about?
that was to me the strange choice.
Dave Bautista, I love him because he was this... everything that they did was like this pragmatic view of an old Bond. You had Blofeld, and he still had sort of his diabolical plan with sort of dispatching Bond, but it didn't seem like it didn't seem like the Austin Powers thing where I'm going to leave you in this tank of really ill-tempered piranha.
well, don't get me wrong.
I escape my sharks with lasers.
Don't get me wrong. I actually liked Dave Bautista, always have, even when he was a wrestler. But I thought the steel fingernails part just made me laugh. It's like, odd job, you know, he's one step from throwing a shoe.
But to me, that was sort of like the, okay, yeah, maybe that's this particular psychopath's just little thing, but it's not the big metal teeth like Jaws. It's not, you know, odd job's cat. You know, it was much more
God
subtle,
rest his soul.
You know.
Now, the worst part of this entire film for me was the opening song.
Yes, this is the second male singer, because I swear the first one is at Casino Royale, but I could be wrong.
You are very.
You mean like
wrong.
The first one ever?
Because there's only been two male.
Live and Let Die.
I was gonna say Live and Let Die.
Guns N' Roses.
Okay, no, then there've been three.
Christ's sake, James.
Oh, what? Who? Okay, fine.
Paul McCartney, bro.
Oh, that's right.
Because then there've been three. Because usually it have female. Because usually they have female singers, which I actually think serve Bond better in an opening.
But
I think
this guy tried to become a female singer in the middle of his song.
It was vaguely falsetto.
Did you catch that? I mean, he totally was. Oh yeah. Sam Smith, you suck.
I know. Yeah, see, that's the thing. It was such a. It was such a they went after teenage girls on that song.
I don't know.
They should have just gotten Justin Bieber. I mean, come on.
I mean you can't Justin hear the Bieber's fat lady sing when you're going that high.
Yeah, that was horrible. I loved the visual of the opening, but the song, even the lyrics, I hated.
God, it's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, well, they as far as the Bond songs go, they've always been kind of hit and miss. I mean, not all of them can be, you know,
this is the
gold
worst
finger,
one by
diamonds
far.
Are forever.
No,
this
yeah, this
is the
is,
worst
you know,
one by far.
This, you know, in baseball terms, you just walked the person to the next base. I mean, this one was horrible.
I mean, this is Daniel Craig's last Bond.
Allegedly.
But, you know, Daniel Craig said, this is my last Bond, and you're going to go out with that song?
But he did say that about the last one.
True.
See, that's the thing. I heard an interview with him recently where he's not quite sure. I mean, it's always... Let's just say this: he wouldn't turn it down if later on they said, "Hey, we're continuing this train here."
Here's $5 million, and you don't have to show your boobs.
Yeah, basically, you know, hit the gym for a few more months and go make a lot of money.
Yeah. I do gotta say though, for being probably the slowest James Bond movie ever, especially
I don't know
comparison.
If it's slow. It's well, somber, but, is what I thought.
I would say
from. I didn't think it was just slow. There
well,
was
slow.
Parts,
I guess slow meaning pacing. It was definitely a somber movie, especially compared to his predecessor. Like Pierce Brosnan movies were like, you know, you could almost set a watch by him. They were so fast. I liked the fact this was a tad bit slower. I thought it gave it a little bit better time to tell story and try to interweave more stuff instead of just being a straight action movie.
Well, it definitely had its point that it was trying to make with the sort of all the Big Brother analogies and things like that, and sort of the moral quandary, and which is interesting. And I've said this before about other movies where you almost need to be able to sort of sympathize with the antagonist a little bit, or not sympathize, but at least understand. You need to believe that the antagonist is doing it because he thinks he's right.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? When you have just average psychopaths, it almost doesn't read true. It's like this person who's evil just for evil's sake. But if the evil person believes that he's right, then you as the audience member, you know, are sort of reaping the benefits of that kind of dynamic. You know?
Yeah, it helps that you have a reason to actually dislike the guy besides, oh, there's just, you know,
it helps when you really, truly believe that the bad guy believes in what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree. And I really liked this character. They definitely had to make this movie this long just because they had a lot of loose ends to tie up. That thinking about it, I didn't see at the end of the other movies, but this one, it makes sense why these guys kept doing what they were doing. You know, like
you mean like the Sheaf and
Mr. White and all these characters, they weren't individual bad guys. They were individual bad guys that had a mission for a particular reason.
part of this larger organization. I mean, and like I said, I mean, this was the Bond movie that I've been waiting for. I mean, as soon as I saw Spectre, I was like, oh, sweet. Okay.
Oh, yeah. This
now
is
we're getting back to sort of like the nemesis, you know?
Sam Mendes, I think they picked the perfect guy. I mean, he's known for American Beauty, Road to Perdition. I mean, Road to Perdition's a good film. It really is.
Yeah, hell yeah. Matter of fact, I think that's where him and Daniel Craig met.
Yeah, but it's
because he played Paul Newman's kid in that, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's right. He was Paul Newman's son in that movie.
Yeah. Anyways, but
you know, bastard got to work with Paul Newman.
Now you're just forced to have a salad dressing.
But that film had very slow parts. American Beauty was pretty slow. It was all drama, but you know, it was pretty slow
but a terrific film
for what it did. Yeah, terrific film. So that's, I think they really went with a great pick for that.
He's definitely a good judge on pacing. I do wish this had a little bit more of a thriller feel, because I think they were really close to having a Bond movie, but having you on the edge of the seat the right way, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Well, I mean, like, I think I know what you mean. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, like setup and mystery. I mean, it definitely wasn't like a whodunit. I mean, you kind of really saw a lot of the turns coming, but I think we saw a lot of the turns coming and we wanted them to turn, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I would just like a James Bond movie that I can't guess what happens.
Dude, when I saw the shot, it was like a 3-second shot of the cat. I almost stood up and cheered.
You should have. You would have been the only one going, yay!
Seriously, just in the back. Just... Yeah, no, those little moments, you know, it was like, oh shit, I'm watching a James Bond movie again, you know?
So I do have a question for you guys. Then I want to answer James' question about my favorite scene was, do you think people missed the perennial classic version of Bond, you know, like James, like by Sean Connery, Roger Moore, etc., or do they like the more realistic Bond that Christopher Nolan kind of seemed to kick off with a Batman movie, having things tied a little bit more into real life?
I think people would laugh at the Sean Connerys now. If they didn't watch them as kids, or you know what I mean? Like if they tried to make those things today, you know, it would just be goofy. It would almost seem like a joke.
I don't know.
Like Austin Powers.
Because I would prefer to see a car that has more than just a defibrillator in it. You know, I would like to see something with the guns in front of it and rocket launchers, and that stuff is fun to me.
See, that's what I liked about this one is they teased you for just a minute, like not yet, it's coming, but he's not firing rockets out of the back of his car quite yet.
But I like the character they picked for Q.
Oh yeah,
I think he does a great job. Yeah. I forget where else I've seen him before, but
he plays really well against Daniel Craig.
So yeah,
and dude,
I would like to see
Ralph
him continue.
Fiennes as M is the greatest choice ever.
Yeah.
I like him. I like Judy Dench better, but he's my second bet. My second.
So, I mean, I'm talking like as M, as the quintessential old school M, not Judy Dench's. Like sort of, you have to assume that Judy Dench was like this interstitial, you know, where she was pre James Bond, pre Dr. No. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
By the time we get to Dr. No, M is already M. He's the guy. He's in his office with the leather door and all that stuff.
No, yeah, I get you.
So using Ralph Fiennes as that guy, as that M, was absolutely perfect.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. Is that your favorite scene? You like M?
Well, I liked actually the role that M had in it. I mean, it wasn't just the guy behind the desk in this movie. I mean, it's still, I guess, early enough when he's out there, you know, kind of tooling around with Bond a little bit.
For me, I didn't particularly have a favorite scene, but I really loved the storytelling in this movie. And I never thought I'd say that about a James Bond movie. Storytelling in a Bond movie? I really liked it. I liked the twists and turns and how they weaved the other movies into this. And some of it was subtle. You know, like the pouring the Coke on the floor, watching it go down the little grade, stuff like that to me really enhanced this movie, because you got to see, okay, he's not just a killer. He pays attention. He has intuition. And I really loved that.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked that all the setup had taken place in the previous movies, and they were able to take their time with it while not having one entire movie where it's just explaining everything.
Exactly.
But where you see the evolution because all we know about Blonde, he's the license to kill playboy who knows everything about wine and is a complete womanizing alcoholic.
Deborah Harris.
And you got to see exactly how that happened, how he trusted one woman and that woman totally screwed him over. So that's his sort of disdain for relationships and his alcoholism because of, you know, probably like post-traumatic stress and things like that.
Probably. So I got a telegram from the old guy, Carrier Pigeon. His comment was, it kept his attention the whole time. It's a Bond movie. It isn't the greatest of all time, no, but it was good. So the old guy via telegram gave a 4 out of 5. And I actually agree. To me, this is the second best in this series. To me, it was Casino Royale and this one.
Yeah,
I really liked.
Yeah.
For me, this is a strong 4 out of 5, and I really hope they kind of keep the pacing like this, slow enough to get you intrigued and fast enough not to bore the hell out of you.
Yeah, they definitely don't need to. You know, every 14 seconds blow something up. We are smart enough to watch a story.
I don't know. I think Quantum of Solace is so much better.
That's cute.
Wow. Yeah, that is adorable. Well, I mean, dude, I mean, I think your dad nailed it, dude. Like it's a Bond movie, you know, and that's kind of what we wanted.
I don't know. I think the best one of all time was Octopussy.
You just like saying Octopussy because you're fucking 10 years old.
Oh, shut up.
So what do you get? So you gave it a 4 out of 5, Ryan?
Yeah, I totally have to agree. I mean, it's not the most perfect film in the world, but it's totally Casino Royale and then this one. And I'll put Casino Royale against any other Bond movie. I mean, even though I've been a fan of the franchise forever, it's this one. I'm sorry, Casino Royale, then Spectre, and then the rest.
I 100% agree. James?
I think this one was a good wrap-up for Craig's series. I would think that he would go out on top if he left with this one.
It would be hard to follow up.
Yeah, I think it would be for him. I don't think it's the end of the Bond films. I think they're going to reboot it at some point. I don't know if they're going to continue on with some of the other ones and remake those. Hollywood, you probably will because you're idiots. But, yeah, I think it gets a 4 out of 5. It's not my... I think I like Casino Royale first.
Like, oh, for sure. That's what we're both saying.
I can't say that it's my favorite second, because there's a couple of ones that, you know, were done previously by some of the other guys that were pretty good as well. But
to me,
I don't know. I think it does deserve a 4, but I don't think it's my number 2, though.
It's definitely my number 2, because I really like the Daniel Craig, because it's not like Pierce Brosnan cartoony, but it's not... like so based in real life, it would just go, oh, joy.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of the Roger Moores, so it would have to be going back through some of the Roger Moores before I said for certain that this one takes the cake, because there was a few.
I would agree with that. I mean, there's a handful that I need to go through again. Yeah. Although, I mean, when it comes to Bond, there's probably 4 or 5 really solid James Bond, and then the rest are pretty campy and pretty silly, and you watch them these days and you feel like a kid. And yeah. These movies, that's what I liked, is they didn't make you feel stupid for watching them. They made you feel like, oh, I get to feel like I'm 10 years old because he blew a watch up, but it's still a good movie.
So I want to jump in because I one of the news pieces that I wanted to come out with is...
Wait, you're doing movie news?
Yeah.
Hey, hold on.
What?
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
He's cutting me off.
Yeah, we do have a Facebook page. You'll love us, hate us. Please let us know. We'll read you on air, but at least be creative. Then the fat guy sucks, or you're stupid, or you're the worst thing ever. And also, hey, how about pause for the cause and donate to Old Guy Tech TV?
He looks
keep
like
the
Seth Rogen.
Yeah, tell James that he's retarded for saying Guns N' Roses make Live and Let Die.
Don't give a shit. The song sucked. Anyways, we were talking about Pierce Brosnan and
Brosnan.
I know. But I know. Anyway, I have his name right in front of me too. I don't care. Anyway, so now he's a little butthurt, and he just released it recently in a remarkable story of the James Bond films written by Matthew Field and AJ Chowdow. Anyway, that's not his name, but anyways, the book features 100 new interviews, and one of the ones they highlighted was from little boy Pierce over there, saying that he felt that he was coldly dropped from the franchise after Die Another Day.
He probably was.
Because he was...
I don't think it was his fault. I think they had to go a different direction altogether.
Oh yeah, they couldn't reboot the franchise with him, and it got so cartoony at the end that it was ridiculous.
Yeah, Die Another Day was
terrible.
Yeah,
it was terrible. But like again, dude, I don't think it's not his fault. It was the writers on that one. I don't know what the hell they were thinking.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think he's the worst Bond.
No, of course not. No. George Lazenby is the worst
Bond.
There we
go. Wasn't there a Peter guy, too, that was one Bond or did one?
Well, Peter Sellers did the original Casino Royale. Yeah. But that was David Niven. It was
like,
James Bond.
Pierce, like Woody Allen. The last Pierce Brosnan movie was so bad, it could have been directed by Joel Schumacher and nobody would have noticed.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I'm sure that he didn't have any kind of a creative say in the movie, but when he's doing stuff like in an avalanche and pulling a ripcord and having this ball surround him.
Ball.
You got to realize that you're probably not going to be doing too many more of those.
Yeah,
you
know? That was.
It became too much.
That's insanity. He should have realized that he's lucky to kind of be getting the money that he was getting at the time that he was getting it. The name was still big.
It became too much of a spectacle in an era of movies where I don't think spectacles what people really wanted. I mean, they were entertainment, don't get me wrong, but I think people legitly wanted decent stories.
That's when we as the viewers were starting to kind of turn the corner, like, all right, man, let's come here to literally watch something get blown up. We do like explosions, but there's more than that, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, Halle Berry wasn't really good in that one either.
No, and then we all sort of shared our disdain for what's her face, Denise Richards,
Christmas Jones. Physicist. That was my favorite one because like anybody would legitly take her seriously of being a nuclear physicist.
And that was the joke. It was this obvious thing where it's like, how did you ever think you were going to slip that one by us, guys?
Wasn't she supposed to be Russian, Christmas Jones? Wasn't she Russian?
No, I think she was American.
No, she's American.
I remember there was a really horrible Russian accent in one of those films, so that's fine.
that was GoldenEye.
Was that GoldenEye?
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. What's her name?
Bad Russian accent.
But the funniest thing about GoldenEye is it was the best Pierce Brosnan Bond movie.
But it sparked one of the best video games of all time.
No doubt.
Yeah, but it was the best one. Like, you watched the first one he did as Bond and the last one he did as Bond. The first one was better.
Oh, the whole damn thing, the chasing the plane over the cliff and then diving for it, that was badass.
Yeah, and I almost forgot Sean Bean. Yeah, he died in that one, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's manic. I can't catch a break.
Unlike him, you know, you got Damon.
He technically died twice in that movie.
Yeah. Too bad it can't be like Matt Damon, where everybody's paying tons of money to save his ass.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really like the opposite. Yeah. They pay him a ton of money so they can shoot him or cut his head off or, blow him up.
So, anyways.
So a piece of movie news I found, and it kind of leaves me wondering why do this now, is apparently there's possibly a new He-Man Masters of the Universe movie being remade. And the question why is, it was an 80s cartoon. I grew up watching it. I don't necessarily want a He-Man movie. I mean, who's this for, honestly?
Well, I'll tell you right now that I'm not exactly too precious about the first one.
Oh, no. That's why I want to know why they're remaking it.
Well, I can explain this quite easily. The original He-Man was made to sell toys. Now, the big people at the big movie studios are trying to do the same thing to adults. By trying to sell us our childhood back to us. And a lot of times what happens with these studios is they own the rights to something and they're about to go up. Like, they bought them for a certain period of time.
Like,
and
Spider-Man.
In order to maintain those rights, you either have to repurchase it from the person you bought it from, or it reverts back to them, or you actually do something with it.
Yeah.
So you have to make a movie, you know, or sell it.
Yeah, they did the same thing with, I'm trying to pull it up right now, but
they did the same thing with Spider-Man really
Thundercats.
Recently. I mean, they almost had to give it back, but they had to make a movie just to reboot it.
Well, the only thing they did recently with the Thundercats is they made the cartoon that was actually decent, though.
No, they did. Remember they released like a little video, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It was Brad Pitt was in the teaser trailer. Yeah, here it is. that
I thought that was fan done.
It was. I was gonna say I thought that was like a fan thing.
Yeah, it was, and they were trying to say that it was gonna actually be a movie that was gonna be released in 2012, but they put the trailer out in 2009, and nothing ever came of it. They were trying to get it to get put out. So I'm wondering if this is the same thing they're doing with He-Man, just trying to put out enough material to have one of the studios come out and pick it up.
Because
that's what I thought they were doing with Thundercats.
I think the one difference, at least He-Man can at least be live action. Thundercats being live action would literally be ridiculous.
I mean, Arnold's getting old.
What's that?
Arnold's getting old. I don't think he's going to do it.
Well, I hope not.
But Hulk to do it?
Well, He-Man
Hulk
just
Hogan?
Doesn't trans. I mean,
come on, brother.
He-Man at least translates to live action. Dave
Bautista.
Yeah, there you go.
He's an actor now. He's a giant.
So I do in TV show news. There's you guys heard of DC's Legends of Tomorrow series? It brings together the Flash, Hawkman, and Hawkgirl. I don't know if it's
anything on it.
I've read a little bit about it. I've seen the trailer. It kind of seems like almost a Justice League, but with minor characters.
All right.
Because there's Hawkman, Hawkgirl, Mr. Freeze, Heatwave, Flash and the Arrow, and probably a sidekick or two. I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, I mean, those are supposed to be the ancillary characters, and I don't know, man. I mean, it's the water is up to my eyeballs at this point. I'm drowning in all the comic book stuff.
Yeah, I've been drowning in it for a while, and I'm gonna step.
So I mean, and as much of a fan as I am, and I know you guys are, you know, of a lot of this stuff. I mean, it's the kind of goofy bullshit we all grew up on, and still like to this day, and we're all 30 something. But
James is 12 years old.
I have to be able to whittle it down to sort of like the main ones and things like that. I mean, I didn't even watch Smallville when it came out. That was too much back then.
I'll be honest. The only one I've ever really wanted, especially after all the Avengers movies, like you can stop making it after Doctor Strange and I'd be happy.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the Avengers did the best Hulk out of all the attempts.
Oh, yeah.
Because they barely had him in there.
But I would still like to see a decent Hulk movie, and I would still like to see...
Well, what about...
Dear God, I really want to see it, is a decent Wolverine film.
Well, what about Planet Hulk?
But I think that we're done with that. No, I mean, like, not...
Well because
they... Like a non-animated one.
No.
They were animated.
They were going to do a live-action rendition of Planet Hulk.
Okay.
I think that could work because you don't have the baggage of Bruce Banner.
But unfortunately, this is where I'm at with this. So I want to see a good film dedicated to the Hulk, and I want to see a good film dedicated to the Wolverine. But I feel like we're at a freaking Mexican birthday party, and the pinata's been beaten in shreds. And there's nothing left that we can do with it. So it's like, I want to see it, but it's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
There's nothing left. There's nothing left up there. You're hitting shreds.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch the ones that they're paying, you know, $1 billion to make.
I mean, dear God, I wanted the Norton one to be good, and that was one of the worst ones. And I like Edward Norton.
Yeah, well, of course.
I did hear what was it? I forgot the guy who actually played the Wolverine. Hugh Jackman said something about having Tom Hardy play the Wolverine.
You know, I have news about Tom Hardy, but honestly, I don't think they did Bane right with him.
No.
But he did a decent enough job with Bane that it was like I wasn't pissed off. But he still didn't even do a decent job of Bane.
Well, I don't think that was his fault.
I actually think that's Christopher Nolan.
I actually think Heath Ledger was supposed to be a bigger deal in the next one, and I think this was him more of scrambling to try to save it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But I mean,
but I
you know,
think...
they really tried to catch that same lightning in a bottle with Bane as they did with
the Joker.
I mean, this completely revised kind of thing. I mean, how pissed would we be if they came out with the big tubes in his veins and pumping himself full of the venom and stuff?
I mean,
we would have laughed our ass out of the theater.
But if
it is good they went this other direction and they just got this just giant human being to play this big brooding dude who's like a foot and a half taller than yeah. than Bruce Wayne.
But, you know, I think if they had done it right, it would have been good. But my big issue with it is the fact that if we go back to the Dark Knight with the Joker and we look at it, I mean, they had another big character in there that was completely overshadowed by Heath Ledger and the Joker was Two-Face. Two-Face wasn't even done properly, to be honest.
I thought it was good. I just thought
it was good.
I just think it was too short.
But
well, again, I think we're gonna have to save this. I think
we're gonna have to save this conversation. Maybe we'll just do a superhero, you know, no movie, just do a, you know, a 30 minutes of superhero talk, possibly.
Of how shitty and horrible Hollywood has ruined our childhood. I mean, Heath Ledger is the only one that
So next month we're doing movies we own, and unfortunately I legitimately forgot to bring the movie, so I brought it up on my iPad. Next week's movie I'm doing Snatch.
You can't tell what the hell that is.
I know, it's really hard.
I mean, you can barely read Snatch, but
so next week we're doing the movie Snatch.
It's
been
long enough, it's about time for me to watch it again.
Hey James.
Yeah.
You like Dags?
You gotta like Dags. Everyone likes Dags.
I'm more of a pig guy myself.
That says a lot. He's not Muslim.
It's my favorite Winston Churchill quote. Look it up. And next week we're doing what for the TV series?
Jessica Jones. This is Netflix original.
And so I gave the movie James Bond Spectre a 4 out of 5. James gave it a 4 to 5. Ryan gave it a 4 to 5. The old man said a telegraph thing and gave it a 4 to 5. And as usual, we'll see you next week.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.